Welcome to the Nokia eVoyager program, brought to you by Wharton Executive Education. This podcast is entitled Building a High Performance Organization and is the second of three podcasts focusing on business-driven leadership. Our speaker today is Wharton Professor Joe Ryan.
In this podcast, we're going to look at a diagnostic model for thinking of high performance, how you build a high performance organization. A high-performing organization is an organization that hits its targets, so it executes its strategies, and at the same time, it's capable of agility and learning. So these paradoxical properties, hitting your performance targets and learning at the same time, are the signature properties of a high-performance organization. Most people know high performance by its absence rather than its presence. We work in an organization where resources are not fully leveraged, where we miss our targets, or we hit our targets but we fail to learn. So we have one half of the equation, but not both sides of the equation. So high performance in the context of a fast-changing business like Nokia requires the ability to hit your targets and at the same time an ability to be creative and to learn from emerging trends, what we would call Horizon 2 and Horizon 3 capabilities. Now, what I'd like to do in this podcast is systematically introduce you to a diagnostic model, and this diagnostic model involves five specific levers which can be managed to build a high-performance organization. And each of these levers can be assessed in terms of the organization's current competence. And as our metric, we're going to use a very simple and straightforward metric, green, yellow, red. Red being a problem, green being a strength, yellow being it's unclear. And when we make yellow judgments, we actually look for evidence to ask ourselves whether the judgment trends towards a strength, a green, so it would be a yellow to green judgment, or it's a potential problem. It trends from yellow to red. So we'll be using that type of diagnostic logic. The first dimension of our high-performance model we call aspiration. Does the business model create aspirational energy in the customer base and in the workforce? So the first lever really deals with the value proposition of a business and the extent to which it excites, it energizes, it creates aspirational energy, a deep sense of loyalty in the customer base. And at the same time, does it create this deep sense of energy and aspiration within the company so that the inside and the outside are aligned? The second lever or dimension of the high performance organization deals with targets and goals. And targets and goals are both short-term and long-term. And by long-term, obviously, that would vary depending upon the business you're in and the cycle you're in. But a high-performance organization has two sets of targets. The immediate target that you're executing on in critical projects or through critical business processes, and at the same time, a longer-term target that really, again, would deal with what we called in our first podcast, Horizon 2 capabilities. So targets and goals are the second lever. Key attributes of our targets and goals are the fact that they're highly aggressive, they have to be measurable, they're adjusted over time, so real-time learning occurs. The benefit when an organization is green light in its targets and goals is that there are no misunderstandings concerning alignment and execution priorities, and there's always a new mountain to climb. That is to say, there are always new opportunities for us to go after. So targets and goals are the second dimension of the high performance model. The third dimension of the high performance model really concerns the organization structure and processes. And this is obviously a complicated area to get right in an organization. So what we found in work at Wharton is that it's helpful to distinguish between what we would call macro-level organization processes and micro-organization processes. Both of these are distinctive levers that can be managed. Macro-organization processes really concern the architecture or the design of an organization. Is it a matrixed organization? Is it a functional organization? It really deals with traditional issues around structure. And obviously in Nokia, as an organization keenly interested and very good at networking, that is to say working in a lateral way, working across organization units, you have a complex macro organization structure. Micro-organization structure is actually complementary and I think a more powerful lever for building high-performance organizations. The micro-organization lever essentially deals with getting the best jobs and roles correctly structured and executed. So rather than trying to design and pay attention to all the facets of organization design, we focus first and foremost on the critically most important jobs. Obviously, you know, all jobs are important. Obviously, all people are important. But in the real world, some jobs are more important than others, and some people are more important than others. So in effect, the micro-organization task is to figure out if we have the right people in the right roles in the right jobs with the right skill set. I think as Nokia evolves towards an internet services business, there's a need to think through whether we have figured out what the right roles and jobs are. And I think there's an opportunity for enormous change to occur within the middle of the organization. High-performing managers, high-performing leaders actually are continuously working with these micro and macro levers of organization development, particularly the micro-organization lever. The fourth lever we call the performance information system. This is the performance dashboard, if you will, of your business. And it really is used in a diagnostic fashion. Do we have the correct information to reposition and redirect our business as needed? So the performance dashboard of a business is to be used in building the high-performance organization as a real-time tool to do both problem-solving and to accelerate the growth of a business and to accelerate the redeployment of resources, both capital as well as talent. The last dimension of the high-performance organization we call consequence management, and consequences can be either positive or negative. Historically, we think of rewards as being seminal to an organization, rewards as driving high performance, and indeed, reward is terribly important. If there's not equity in the reward system, and if there are not rewards commensurate with top performance, an organization can suffer. However, consequence management also involves negative consequences. And in research at Wharton, we have found that this is a lever that's unattended to. So let me ask the question in a straightforward and rhetorical way. What are the consequences to a business if somebody faces no penalties for not delivering what they promise? What are the consequences for a business if indeed there are no negative consequences? We have found that businesses tend to be suboptimal when there is not a rigorous and well-defined set of positive and negative consequences. Now, the value of this model is that it allows you to assess the current position of your business using a green, yellow, red logic for each of these dimensions. And this can be done at different levels. You can do this in the immediate work group that you're working in, and you can do this for the larger strategic business unit that you're affiliated with. And at the same time, this could be done at the enterprise level. So being able to assess the current position of the organization using these dimensions of high performance offers us a concrete tool for assessing the current capabilities and for identifying some of the priority gaps as businesses, as your business aspires to move in some new directions. Now, I have a secondary objective in this podcast. In addition to introducing the diagnostic high-performance tool I've just talked about, we're actually at the same time asking you to read a case study of the technology company Cisco. And I've chosen Cisco because it's a widely taught case in executive MBA programs. And the case that I'm asking you to look at looks at the early years of Cisco as it was building the capabilities needed to be a high-performing organization and an organization with excellent market sensing capabilities, an ability to kind of discern trends in management. So this case has been posted on the website, and what I would like to do is to end this podcast identifying six specific questions that can be used for analyzing this case. And we're interested in analyzing this case only to learn more about Nokia's capabilities. You know, we're using the Cisco case as a mirror for you to look into as a Nokia manager to better understand your current strengths and to hopefully understand vis-a-vis some of the things we see in Cisco, what you might want to do differently in the future. So case question one for Cisco, very simple question. During the period of the case, 1994 through 1998, an enormous period of growth in Cisco, what made Cisco successful? What would you identify as the 3 to 5 factors that allowed Cisco to build a scalable, replicatable Horizon 2 growth model and allowed Cisco to build a culture that really stimulated high performance? So question one is very simply, what made Cisco successful during this period? And we would like you also to reflect on the question of what has made Nokia successful to date. As you look back over the last several years, please document in your work groups what you see as the 3 to 5 signature strengths that have made Nokia historically successful. Question two, please think through and identify what the strategic criteria and the process Cisco used for identifying acquisitions, and ask yourself what is relevant or not relevant to Nokia in this arena. Nokia has done several acquisitions to date, and no doubt in the changing landscape in internet services and technology company, there will be more acquisitions and alliances as you want to rapidly enter new marketplaces. Question three for the Cisco case is asking you to identify what are the specific process steps in Cisco's acquisition integration process. How actually do they integrate acquisitions so that the skills and capabilities are optimized? And 1 and 1 equals 3. Oftentimes in alliances and acquisitions, this process of integration is suboptimal and flawed. Cisco has historically been regarded as a best practice company in this regard. Question four, culture is often called the invisible barrier to change. How indeed did Cisco manage culture? And Cisco actually used culture as a business asset. And the corollary question for you at Nokia is what is relevant and not relevant to Nokia as you reflect on how your culture is both like and unlike Cisco? Question 5 and 6 really asks you to apply the high performance diagnostic model I introduced in this podcast first to Cisco. Map out using the green, yellow, red logic Cisco's strengths and weaknesses in the case using the levers of high performance that we talked about, and think through how Nokia might learn from Cisco. So we're interested in the high performance assessment and an analysis of Cisco in terms of your learnings. And then the last question, question 6, is applying the high performance model that I've introduced in this module directly to Nokia. Okay, we're not actually using any references to the case. Based on the working experience of people in your study group, in your work group, what would you identify based on your understanding of Nokia today as its strengths and weaknesses concerning these different levers? Now, obviously, this exercise is complicated because Nokia is complicated. I would suggest that the group does this at two different levels. One is to do an enterprise assessment of Nokia, and then the second would be to do a unit-specific assessment for the particular business that you work in. Obviously, our intent here is to think in practical terms, in terms of the unit you work in, but at the same time, to step back and to take an expansive view and to try to assess at the enterprise level the strengths and also the capability requirements needed in the future as Nokia's business model continues to evolve. So in summary, I introduced a way to think about and actually diagnose the drivers of high performance. Additionally, we've introduced a case study, and we want to use the case study to actually help us look at Nokia from the outside in. So we've chosen a best practice company, Cisco, and we've chosen a period in time which was seminal in the development of Cisco's core strengths and weaknesses.
This concludes Podcast 2 of the learning module, Business Driven Leadership. This podcast has been a production of Wharton Executive Education, for the exclusive use of Nokia in its eVoyager program. Thanks for listening.